It's Thursday, September 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Pope Francis prepares to address the U.S. Congress. Chinese President Xi Jinping travels to Washington for talks with U.S. President Barack Obama. We'll speak with an analyst.
I think what President Obama will do is tell President Xi that the United States is serious about potentially slapping sanctions on China.
A prominent Chinese human rights lawyer says he was tortured by government authorities. And country music star Tim McGraw struggles with his voice. It's all ahead. Pope Francis's visit to the United States has already been marked by controversial themes, including immigration, climate change, traditional marriage, religious freedom, and the right to life. On his first full day in Washington Monday, he met privately with President Obama, and he also met with U.S. bishops and presided over a mass attended by thousands. Chad Pechnold, a theology professor at the Catholic University of America here in Washington, tells International Edition's Victor Beatty the Pope purposely put these issues, which cross the political divide in the United States, together.
We saw right from the beginning in the address on the West Lawn this morning, he highlighted his issues very clearly. He reminded us that he was a migrant. That was his first issue, immigration. And then he turned to the family and a strong support for the institution of marriage and the family, he said, in these critical times. And then he stressed the issue of religious freedom for individuals and for communities. And then he stressed the theme of care for our common home. I think that putting these together is Pope Francis's way of bundling aspects of Catholic teaching that don't often get put together. So issues of immigration and care for our common home often resonate with the left in this country, and the issues of family and religious freedom seem to resonate with the right. And I think by bundling these together, he's pointing America to the common good, which is the human person. And that's critical for looking at questions of immigration. It's not questions about fences and borders. It's questions about how do you keep migrant families together and care for them.
Is there a concern that others will try to use his moral authority to advance their own political agendas?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that, and the Holy Father is perfectly aware of that. I mean, D.C. is all about that. D.C. is all about, you know, messaging and managing perceptions. The Pope isn't really interested in managing perceptions. There's no spin to this Pope. In a sense, that makes him vulnerable to being captured by party concerns. On the other hand, I think there's more than celebrity to this Pope. There's a gravitas and an intrigue about him that I think is attractive. And I think people know that there's something about his message that is cutting through ideological filters.
So is this the beginning of a theme throughout his six-day visit to the U.S.?
My guess is yes. My guess is that the four themes that came out on the White House West Lawn event this morning were almost like a thesis statement. If you can, you know, you can tell I'm a professor that I want to see a thesis statement and I want to see an argument built. I think he did lay out some key themes: immigration, the family, religious freedom, care for our common home. He seems to be hitting those themes very directly. The other theme that came out very strongly in the homily is joy, having the right kind of joy. This is something that he's touched upon in the past, but I think he's going to really develop this theme on his journey, is what does it mean to experience joy and to bring that joy to the margins, to those who don't feel joy, to those who are disenfranchised, those who have been forgotten, the elderly, the migrant, the unborn. So I think that this kind of emphasis on the issues, but then also a kind of evangelical aspect to it as well.
That's Chad Pechnold of Catholic University. Another controversial move by the Pope was his canonization of a controversial Spanish missionary, Franciscan friar Junipero Serra, who left a comfortable life in Europe to minister to the indigenous tribes in the California territory in the 18th century. Becknoll says Pope Francis identifies with Sarah, who he says joyfully took the gospel to others in his decision to elevate him to sainthood. But some Native Americans accuse Sarah of being part of a Spanish conquest that led to the deaths of thousands through harsh treatment and disease that devastated tribal culture. Well, joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. So, Andrew, what's the reaction to the Pope's visit?
Well, it's been overwhelmingly positive. You had a lot of pictures yesterday, people who could get them through at least on their cell phones, of the Pope's parade around the ellipse around the White House. And I say people who could get them through because there were so many people that the cell phone service was really tested. So a lot of people trying to tweet out couldn't. So you saw people even tweeting a couple hours afterwards, sending out their pictures. And a lot of people on Facebook as well, posting pictures, video of the parades, and lucky few who were able to get to the White House. And I say few kind of tongue in cheek, because I think there were about 15,000 people on the South Lawn of the White House. So a huge crowd there. President Obama actually made reference to that and said, we don't usually have this many people here on the White House lawn. But it's been just overwhelmingly positive on social media. A lot of people pointing out that there was a young girl during the Pope's parade around the ellipse who ran out and he lifted her up and kissed her and hugged her. And this young girl is an immigrant. Her parents are here, I believe, illegally in the country from Mexico. And she was trying to give the Pope a message. She had a paper that she had written out about rights for immigrants in America. I know that's a big issue for Pope Francis. So maybe that'll be something that he takes to heart. And I'm sure he'll mention it today in his speech in the Capitol. In fact, West Lawn is actually trending on Twitter right now because it's the West Lawn of the U.S. Capitol where he's going to come out and speak today after addressing a joint session of Congress. People have already been lining up 4 o'clock in the morning. We've already seen people on Twitter posting pictures, a lot of people posting the beautiful sunrise over the top of the Capitol Dome, and a lot of anticipation. They said, 2 hours to go from about now or 3 hours or so, and they're stuck there. Police won't let people out. Once they're in, and but they're excited. It's a very festive mood, it seems, based on social media, and we're going to be out there later today, so we'll surely be tweeting out some pictures as we meet people. Another trending topic today, and a sad note, in Mina near Mecca, there was a stampede during the Hajj, and officials say over 400 people were killed in the stampede. As we were talking about just before the show, this seems to happen every few years. There's a stampede of some sort. So a lot of people mourning those deaths on social media, saying, why is this happening again after it's happened so many years in the past? Why haven't they done anything to correct this? And we had actually a commenter who posted on our Voice of America Facebook page last night. We had a post about the Hajj, and he said, yeah, these millions of people will be there, but there may not be 1,000 that come out because of the stampedes, and kind of a premonition of what happened. But so sad news out of there, but hopefully that'll be something that they can correct in the future.
Yeah, hopefully there will be. Well, thanks very much, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Well, in other news, Chinese President Xi Jinping faces potentially difficult discussions with his American counterpart at the White House Friday. They will be talking about cybersecurity, maritime tensions, and human rights. And this is Mr. Xi's first state visit to the United States. China expert Bonnie Glaser of the Washington-based Centers for Strategic and International Studies tells VOA's Victor Beatty the status of bilateral relations between the world's two largest economies are complicated. Well, the two leaders discuss the matter at the matter of Chinese hacking of government and corporate hacking at Sunnylands in California in June 2013 and last November in Beijing.
What President Obama will do is tell President Xi that the United States is serious about potentially slapping sanctions on China. If in the future the U.S. has more evidence that China is stealing trade secrets from American companies, I think that this information will be shared with Beijing. And if the Chinese government does not prosecute the company or individuals who are responsible, then I think that there will be the imposition of sanctions. And I think this is the message that Obama's going to convey.
In Seattle, one of the officials traveling with the president indicated that there might be some sort of cyber warfare agreement, a code of conduct, if you will, reached during this state visit. How likely do you think that might be?
Well, there have been reports of the possibility that the two countries will sign an agreement where they will not target each other's critical infrastructure. So that means, for example, electrical grids, maybe large water sources. I'm not so certain. There was a background briefing that was given by very senior administration officials, and that suggests that the expectations are not very high for such an agreement. But there's another possibility, and that is the establishment of a higher-level dialogue mechanism on cyber issues. But one of the problems with the existing mechanism is that it's very low level. It's run by Foreign Ministry and State Department, which, of course, on the Chinese side, the Foreign Ministry is very little clout. And it's very difficult to coordinate all the different parts of the system. Another problem is that since the United States indicted 5 PLA officers, the Chinese have suspended the talks. And so we don't have an effective dialogue mechanism. So creating a new one and making it higher level at least holds out the promise of making some progress on this issue in the future.
In remarks at Georgetown University earlier this week, National Security Advisor Susan Rice suggested that the U.S. will not be intimidated by territorial ambitions by China in the South China Sea.
Yes, the administration is talking tough on the South China Sea. That has been going on for quite some time. The rhetoric perhaps has gotten a little bit sharper this year and in recent months. But the administration really is not doing very much in action. There have been reports ever since May that the Obama administration is considering conducting freedom of navigation operations by sending either aircraft or ships into the 12 nautical miles around an artificial island that used to be a submerged reef over which no country could actually have sovereignty and therefore has no entitlement to a territorial sea around it. But we have not seen that happen. Indeed, in hearings last week at the Senate Armed Services Committee, the Defense Department's assistant Secretary of Defense David Scheer confirmed that the United States has not sailed within those waters since 2012. So again, growing pressure on the administration to do more than just talk tough.
That is Bonnie Glaser of the Centers for Strategic and International Studies. This is VOA.
Here's Science in a Minute.
Scientists have discovered a new species of duck-billed dinosaur that made their home in northern Alaska some 69 million years ago, toward the end of the Cretaceous period. They were the northernmost dinosaurs to have lived during the so-called Age of Dinosaurs. The researchers call these polar dinosaurs Ugrunulakukpikensis, which means ancient grazer. The species grew to a length of about 9 meters, roamed the Arctic in herds, and lived on a diet of hardy Arctic vegetation. With hundreds of teeth, they were well-equipped to eat their tough-textured food. Although the climate in the Arctic then was much warmer than it is today, the dinosaurs still had to cope with months of winter darkness and snow since they lived so far up in the north. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we'll hear about the vocal problems affecting singer Tim McGraw. Prominent Chinese human rights lawyer Gao Zhisheng has described torture by Chinese authorities. Gao was released from prison last year, and he told the Associated Press details about his treatment while under custody. I'm joined now by Patrick Poon. He is China researcher at Amnesty International, and he joins me on the line from Hong Kong. Mr. Poon, how did Mr. Gao, how did he describe some of the torture that he was subjected to?
Like, according to what he told the Associated Press, what we can see is actually very brutal torture from those who were guarding him when he was in custody. It was like he described himself like being like an animal, like being tortured in a way, in very bestial way. So, of course, some of the details about like not giving him enough food or and like kind of detaining him in a way not allowing him to have sunlight, you know, contained in a very small room for a very long period of time for the 3 years of his imprisonment. So that made him feel like he couldn't handle walking in when he was taken to the airport. So what we can see is like kind of a person under such serious torture, ill treatment for a long period of time would feel very lost when he or she was taken to another place outside a solitary confinement for a long period of time. So we're quite concerned about like his current condition, although like he's been released for some months already, but the good condition is that he's still under kind of certain surveillance. We're not 100% sure what kind of surveillance he's under, but it's also worrying that whether the authorities would retaliate against him after his account is now being released. So and also the comments he made in the interviews were also kind of like challenging the Chinese government, and also the way that he put was like also writing he's written two books which also contain information about torture he faced in detention, and also his ideas on what the current human rights situation in China is. So those things would be nice things the Chinese government might use those materials as to retaliate against him. So we're calling for more people to pay attention on his case, although he has been released. But his condition is still under, like, very tight surveillance.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Poon. That's Patrick Poon. He's China researcher at Amnesty International, and he's based in Hong Kong. This is VOA.
Hashtag VOA. It's a weekly show, Tuesdays at 1730 UTC, where we bring you the top topics of the week. But the show lives on social media every day with your daily video shorts, What's Trending Wednesday, and the Friday Fast Five. Subscribe to the show at YouTube. You can find us at hashtag VOA. You can reach me at Twitter, at Perry Cal, or talk to the show anytime. Please don't forget to like us on Facebook. We like to be liked. We love to be seen. And you can reach us anytime.
This is International Edition. Country music star Tim McGraw can't sing. That's not an editorial comment, but a medical one. McGraw's had to cancel the last two shows of his current Shotgun Rider tour because of vocal distress. International Edition's Pete Heinlein talked with VOA Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong about McGraw's condition, which is similar to one which sidelined several top acts, including Little Big Town, Kelly Clarkson, Sam Smith, and Meghan Trainor.
Nikki, what's the story here?
Yeah, Tim McGraw's been added to the list. It's interesting. He's been on his Shotgun Rider tour since June, and it's been taking a toll on his vocal cords. Lucky for him, he doesn't have to have surgery. But the doctor has mandated that he cancels his last two tour dates. So he's been nonstop, but apparently he can't finish it. Not according to doctor's orders. He must rest. So the last two shows have been canceled. Hopefully they will be rescheduled sometime soon.
Boy, that's a tough one for us country music fans, especially.
Yeah. You know, I think that a lot of people, the industry really has to reevaluate its approach to touring, because a lot of these artists, they're singing. They're not making money off of album sales, so they have to tour. That's how they're making the majority of their money. And they're doing like hour sets or 90-minute long sets. And they're taxing their vocals because they're doing these sets consecutively. Like, they're not getting the proper rest. If they smoke or drink at all, that also impacts their vocal cords.
And they do.
Yes, of course. Even if it's a glass of wine, it still does stress the vocal cords when you are singing that intensely on the road. And there isn't the incentive to just keep going, because there's so much money riding on these tours. We could have a little double wide planet in an empty field. We could have a big old wide planet.
lap around on a hill. Don't make a difference to me, baby, where the wind takes me, long as I'm with you, girl. We could have something or nothing, still be sitting on top of the world.
Well, what's happening? I mean, Tim McGraw was here in town a couple of weeks ago and did a really phenomenal show.
Yeah.
What are the rest of his fans who are holding tickets? What happens to them?
Well, you know, it's a bummer for everybody involved. They haven't said when they're going to reschedule those dates. And I still think in the grand scheme of things, like Little Big Town had to cancel several weeks worth of shows. And his is just the last two shows of his final tour. So I think, you know, it's a bummer for everybody because people have to reschedule as far as artists and as well as the venue. And everybody who's involved in making this show phenomenal as it is.
We remember how Adele came on the scene with that fantastic full voice.
Yeah.
And then she's gone.
Yes.
I mean, can she come back? I mean,
she's actually her new album is set to drop fairly soon at the end of this year. So she has recovered fairly well. But, you know, it's an excellent point. There's so much pressure on these artists to keep producing. So not only are they touring, but a lot of them are recording their albums while they are touring. So that even makes it worse. But as far as Adele's concerned, she took a break. She had her vocal surgery, and she's coming back this year. And Tim McGraw, as well, is getting ready to drop his next album, November 6th, called Damn Country Music.
Nikki Strong, always a pleasure to have you here. You can catch Nikki Strong on Country Hits USA on VOA 1. You can also reach out to Nikki on Twitter at VOA_music. Thank you so much, Nikki.
Thank you.
Like we got love. Sitting on top of the world.
The music of Tim McGraw. And that's our show for today. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Every year, as required by law, the President of the United States informs the Congress which countries produce illicit drugs or serve as transit points. But that does not mean that their governments are not making a substantial effort to rectify the situation or that they are not cooperating with the United States and other nations to control the production and flow of illegal drugs. It just means that due to a combination of geographic, commercial, political, and economic factors, those who produce or smuggle narcotics deem these countries to be convenient for the operation of their nefarious trade. Of the 22 countries that made this year's list, 17 are in Latin America. Though Bolivia and Venezuela did not make meaningful efforts to meet their obligations to international counter-narcotics agreements over the past year, four Latin American countries made commendable progress. Last year, about 86% of cocaine destined for the United States moved through seven countries in Central America. The remaining 14% traveled through the Caribbean. Mexico, working with the United States through the Merida Initiative, made headway toward breaking the power and impunity of transnational criminal organizations, strengthening border controls and law enforcement, and improving the capacity of its judicial system to investigate and prosecute drug cases. In the Caribbean, Haiti took advantage of U.S. technical assistance and financial support to strengthen its police brigade in the fight against narcotics trafficking. Summoning considerable political will, Haiti's government stood up to criminal organizations, improved its counter-narcotics capability, beefed up its maritime interdiction, allowing it to start seizing drug shipments, and last year passed a law criminalizing public corruption, which goes hand in hand with the illicit drug trade. In South America, Colombia and Peru, countries that struggle with large-scale drug production, have been successful in seizing numerous large shipments of cocaine. Peru developed alternative livelihoods for farmers previously dependent on illicit cultivation, while Colombia's eradication efforts helped reduce coca cultivation by 52% in 5 years. Illicit drugs are destructive to people and society. The United States will continue to expand and enhance collaborative counter-narcotics and anti-crime partnerships to eradicate them globally.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.